through the win column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Inside. Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk off home run. Grand slam. Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 464. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to give you my overreactions to the Phillies' first week of the season, in which they went 5-1 and sit atop the National League East. I'm going to talk to Jeff Warren, who's the host of the outstanding podcast, The Philadelphia Sports Table. We'll get his thoughts on what he saw during the first week of the Philly season. I'm also going to talk about a crazy ending to the Mets-Marlins game on Thursday afternoon, and I will also have your stat of the week. Before we jump into all that stuff, I want to remind you to continue to check out the Good Fight podcast feed each and every day. We've got new podcasts up for you virtually every day. Any day that we're not doing a Hittin' Season or a continued success, we'll get you an up and in when the series ends. We've done that a couple times this week. And of course, there are new continued successes always coming out every week, and two episodes of Hittin' Season every week, and the Dirty Inning, of course, every other week. And then you've got bonus content over at the Hittin' Season Patreon with Absolutely Hammered and Justin and Liz's TV reviews. And we've got lots of other stuff coming your way this summer, and we've got some new tiers for you to check out there. So I want you all to go to patreon.com/hittin'season, see what we've got there for you, and see if you'd be interested in becoming a Patreon member of this here fine podcast. All right, let's get into the show. And obviously, we are excited about the first week of the Philly season. 5-1 with series wins, a series sweep against the Atlanta Braves to start the year, and then, of course, taking 2 out of 3 from the New York Mets this week. Two very exciting series. The Phillies' bats finally came alive in the final game of that Mets series with 3 home runs by Rhys Hoskins, a 3-run homer by Alec Bohm, and a 3-run homer by JT Realmuto. And the Phillies have a 2.5, or actually, I'm sorry, no, it was not a 2.5-game lead. Now it's a 2-game lead in the National League East, but still, the number of games they're ahead right now doesn't matter. The fact that the Phillies have gotten off to a hot start is what's most important. And this baseball team has been fun to watch so far. And anytime you're just 1 week into the baseball season, you're going to have some irrational early thoughts, some irrational takes, some overreactions to what you've seen. Because in baseball, when you have a 162-game schedule, you need the larger sample size to really see what's what. But all we have so far is 6 games. All we have so far is 1 week. So the only thing you can have are overreactions to the first week of the baseball season. So here are mine. Here are my overreactions to the Phillies' first week of the season. And the first one, of course, is that Zach Wheeler is going to win the National League Cy Young Award. I say this after he has started just 1 game, of course. But that one start was pretty awesome. His FWAR on the season after just one start, 0.5. That's how good that start was. He was so good, he's already been worth half a win. Now, if you say he's going to get 30 starts during the course of a season, that prorates to a 15-win season for Zach Wheeler. So, obviously, Zach Wheeler is going to win the National League Cy Young Award, because a 15-win season, at least according to Fangraphs metrics, has never been done before. The highest anyone's ever had is an 11.6 FWAR season. That, of course, was Pedro Martinez in 1999. Steve Carlton in 1972. Remember that legendary Steve Carlton season? The second highest FWAR of all time at 11.1. But, of course, listen, Zach Wheeler is not going to have a 15-win season. He probably will have a 5 or a 6-win season, if we're lucky, you know? So, obviously, again, an overreaction. But it was an impressive start, and Zach Wheeler has really been this team's best pitcher over the course of the last 2 seasons. Just, you know, a little better than Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola has still been very good, but and maybe Zach Wheeler has a start like Aaron Nola had in his last outing. Again, that second game against the New York Mets, Aaron Nola only went 4 innings, did not pitch all that well, but has enough swing and miss pitches, has enough strikeout stuff. This was in the series finale on Wednesday, not in the game on Tuesday that they lost. He has enough swing and miss stuff to get out of jams when he gets in them. I mean, he had no idea where the ball was going. He couldn't command the baseball, but between the curveball, between his four-seamer, between the cutter that he's now throwing, he's got so many different kinds of pitches that he was able to dance through the raindrops and keep the New York Mets at bay and allow the Phillies to just pile on the runs after that. But Zach Wheeler, I don't know. We will see how the season plays out. I get the feeling that by the end of the season, Zach Wheeler will have had a better season than Aaron Nola. But again, that's another overreaction to the first week of the season. Aaron Nola has had two starts this year. Zach Wheeler has had just one, but that one start was a doozy. And Zach Wheeler really looks like he wants to become one of those elite type guys. And he has the talent to do it. He's got the 97, 98 mile an hour fastball to do it. He's had pinpoint control this spring and in the first game of the season as well that he pitched. I'm very bullish on Zach Wheeler and his future. One move that Matt Klentak got right was picking Zach Wheeler over the other options that were out there. Another overreaction to the Phillies' first week of the season, Rhys Hoskins is, of course, going to be the National League MVP. He has been on fire at the plate so far this season. He is batting 417 on the season with a 417 on base percentage. No walks for Rhys Hoskins so far. He's been a little bit more aggressive at the plate, but that's okay when you've got a 792 slugging percentage and a weighted on base average of 515. When you know you've been piling up the extra base hits, he's got the one home run, but he's also got the six doubles so far on the season. So those extra base hits are piling up for Rhys Hoskins, and I'm going to have a stat of the week with regard to Rhys Hoskins coming up. But that 1208 OPS, pretty darn good so far here, and by far the best hitter on the Phillies so far this season. Great to see a hot Rhys Hoskins, and we forget how damaging he can be when he gets hot. It's just we haven't seen super hot Rhys Hoskins in a while. He was very good last year until he got hurt. He can be a dynamic part of this offense if he's smoking the baseball. Because we believe Bryce Harper and JT Realmuto and Didi Gregorius and Alec Bohm are going to hit. If Rhys Hoskins is going to hit too, it just lengthens the lineup so much. And you've got him in that number two spot. That's a really important spot in the lineup to set up the guys behind him. So Rhys Hoskins off to a very fast start. One of the few Phillies hitters to have gotten off to a fast start here in 2021. Alec Bohm is the best pure hitter on this team. The numbers are a little down for him so far, but he has come through in some clutch situations. He is the guy that you want at the plate most with runners on base late in a game, and that says volumes for a guy who has only, 45, 50 games under his belt in his big league career? I mean, he didn't join the team till a few weeks into the season last year, but he just makes so much contact, and he doesn't try to do too much, but he also showed you on Wednesday that when he gets into a ball, he can send it a long way, and I think the power is going to come for him this year. I think we're going to get 20 home runs from Alec Bohm. I think he's going to hit over 300, and you just, when he's at the plate, he lines balls up. He very rarely gets himself out. He's always working a good count. He doesn't walk a lot, but he's gonna get a ton of hits this year. Here's an overreaction. Maybe this is a bold prediction. Alec Bohm will get 200 hits this year. If he stays healthy, Alec Bohm will get 200 hits this year. That's how good a hitter he is. He's so adept at putting the bat on the baseball, and you can't shift on him because he'll hit the ball the other way. He'll hit the ball to right and left center. He hits the ball to all fields, and he's almost slump proof so far in his career. He has been slump-proof. He's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start this year, but again, we're talking about six games, so can't make any firm judgments on anything other than Alec Bohm is, of course, going to be the best pure hitter on the Phillies. The bullpen is way better than we thought, and dare I say, a top three bullpen in the National League. From Jim Salisbury, during the 60-game season of last year, Phillies relievers threw just 64 pitches at 96 miles an hour or better. That was the fewest in the major leagues. In just six games so far, they've already thrown 74 pitches at 96 miles an hour or higher. 10 more than all of last year in six games. That's fifth most in the majors. When you talk about what Dave Dombrowski did to fix this bullpen, that's what it was. And the difference is dramatic. Sam Coonrod, Connor Brogdon, Jose Alvarado, all three of those guys have been incredibly important because of the speed that they give you. And even you don't have to have the entire bullpen full of guys who throw 97, 98. And some of those, some of these guys come over here and Alvarado's throwing 100 mile an hour sinkers. I mean, he's throwing in triple digits. I think have we seen Coonrod or Brogdon get over 100? I think maybe one of them has thrown over 100, but maybe not. Either way, Alvarado can get the ball up over 100 miles an hour. When you have guys like Archie Bradley and Hector Neris and Brandon Kinsler who don't necessarily throw that hard, you have some differences there. You have one guy who's going to come in and he's going to smoke 98, 99 mile an hour fastballs by you. And then you have Brandon Kinsler, who's a ground ball guy, and Archie Bradley, who's got a funky delivery and manages to get guys out in different ways. That's what this bullpen's been missing. It's been missing different types of pitchers, it's been missing the hard throwers. It's been missing the soft tossers, the ground ball guys. And right now, this bullpen, the six main guys in the bullpen that we've been talking about have done the job. And it's amazing what speed can do. That is insane. They threw just 64 pitches, 96 miles an hour or better last year in 60 games. They already have 74 this year in six games. That's just insane. So yeah, my overreaction, the Phillies bullpen is at least one of the top three bullpens in the National League. And when you consider where they came from last year, my goodness, that's one of the reasons why this team could be really scary here in 2021. Another overreaction, the Phillies starting center fielder in September is not currently on this roster. Adam Haseley, Roman Quinn, it's not going to work. I mean, maybe that's putting, I mean, I definitely feel that way about Roman Quinn. I'm out on Roman Quinn. Out, 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 out. I'm not out on Adam Haseley, but man, misplaying that fly ball earlier this week and, you know, just not being sharp at the plate, just, I don't know, man. It just doesn't feel like it's going to be one of these two guys in September in the heat of a pennant race. And I don't think it's going to be Odubel Herrera. And I don't think it's going to be Mickey Moniak. As much as Mickey Moniak impressed during spring training, maybe if he plays well in AAA, which I think he will, maybe they would give him the job. But if you're in a pennant race, are you turning center field, an important position like that, over to Mickey Moniak? No matter how well he plays in AAA, I don't know that I would be feeling comfortable doing that. So I feel like a trade will be in the works at some point this summer to fix center field. Because I don't think, I mean, all you're asking these guys to do is hit a little bit and play a good defensive center field. And neither Haseley or Quinn have been able to do it. Now, it hasn't hurt them a whole lot because the lineup is so deep and because the pitching has been so good. But when it comes down to it, the Phillies don't need to go out and trade for another huge bat to play center field. They need a guy who can play solid defensively and give you a solid at bat in the number eight spot in the lineup. Because that's where the center fielder is going to hit. He's going to hit number eight. Now, if you can go out and find a number eight guy, a center fielder who can maybe hit leadoff, and you can maybe move Andrew McCutchen down in the lineup a little bit, because again, I'm still not sold on Andrew McCutchen as this team's leadoff hitter, then I would love to see them go out and do something like that. And they've saved themselves a little bit of money in order to make some moves here at the trade deadline in a couple of months. But it's far too early to be talking about any of that. I understand. I just, my feeling watching Haseley and Quinn this first week is that they're not going to be the starting center fielders on this team. And I don't think they have in September. And I don't think that they have an option here that they'll feel comfortable going to be the starting center fielder in September. I think it's going to come from outside the organization. Who that is, we'll have to kind of see who teams make available as we move along here. The Mets should have signed JT Realmuto. I think the Mets realize this. Now, you could argue maybe signing JT Realmuto means they can't go out and trade for Francisco Lindor and sign him to that big long-term contract. Maybe that's true. And I'm sure, and Francisco Lindor is a better player than JT Realmuto. I think that's fair. But JT's three-run home run on Wednesday was kind of a kick in the pants to them, I gotta believe. And JT Realmuto is the best catcher in baseball. The Phillies are certainly happy that the Mets were not willing to wait around for Realmuto's price to come down or for Realmuto to decide to go to New York. And, you know, Realmuto told us in his Zoom news conferences that there was never really any doubt in his mind that he was coming to Philadelphia. I don't believe him. I don't believe that. I just don't. I think the New York Mets were absolutely on his radar screen until they signed McCann. And so we can all be very, very pleased that JT Realmuto is in Philadelphia. Dave Dombrowski is a genius. Maybe that's not an overreaction because the guy's going in the Hall of Fame. But the previous guy didn't know what he was doing. I don't think either of those things are 100% correct, but it's just the overreaction that you get when you watch this team that Dave Dombrowski put together and the changes that he made in the offseason with the bullpen and how the team has performed in the first week. And it seems like all these moves, Sam Coonrod, Jose Alvarado, Brandon Kinsler, all these relief pitchers they went out and got, we'll see about Matt Moore and Chase Anderson, but all these guys that they went out and got are working out so far. Whereas so many players that Matt Klentak went out and got didn't work out. How much of it was luck? How much of it was, not being a genius? I don't know. But Dave Dombrowski just pushed all the right buttons. And so far here in this first week, again, these are just overreactions from the first week. I'm fully understanding that all this stuff is way too premature. But that's part of the fun of the first week of the baseball season. And one last overreaction. I do thank you, John Middleton, for giving us a team to root for. Thank you for spending money on this team. Thank you for putting for allowing Dave Dombrowski to do his job and add players and go out and not take a gap year this year to compete in 2021 in a division that was also adding players. And right now the Phillies sit atop that division and they've given themselves a nice little springboard to the start of the season and hopefully gotten the fan base a little juiced. And right now is the perfect time because the Philadelphia Eagles are on the downslope. Of course, everybody's excited about the Sixers and we'll see what the Sixers do here in the playoffs. But this summer, the Phillies have a chance to capture this city. The Eagles are going to have no juice this summer, okay? None. Training camp is going to be boring. Nobody's really going to be paying much attention to the Eagles because they're just not going to be a competitive team. If this franchise, if the Phillies can actually string some wins together and get into a pennant race, this town is ready to be a baseball town again. And John Middleton has given this team and has given Dave Dombrowski And let's not just John Middleton, the Buck family, all the other owners who go in on this as well. They all, I think, deserve a little bit of credit for not shutting things down, for allowing Dave Dombrowski to go ahead and spend some money and spend right up to the luxury tax. And of course, I would love them to go over the luxury tax and so would everybody else, but that's just not something that's going to happen in our lifetime. And so the sooner we wrap our minds around that, the better. In the meantime, John Middleton, Buck family, everybody else, thank you for giving us a team that we can root for and hopefully watch a pennant race here during the course of the summer. But again, these are all overreactions to the Phillies' first week, okay? It's okay if you're listening to this podcast to overreact to the first week of the season. If you overreact on Twitter, you're going to get yelled at. And just understand that's fine. That's what Twitter's for. It's for getting yelled at. Some people on Twitter don't like for you to have hypothetical conversations about sports. They don't like for you to guess to have a conversation who's better, Aaron Nola or Zach Wheeler. They don't like you to have who's the most important Philly, who's the most underrated, who's the most overrated. That's what sports is all about, right? Sports is about comparing players, comparing eras, talking about what ifs. What if this had happened? What if that had happened? It's part of what makes sports fun. And that's part of what we're doing here in this first segment of Hittin' Season. This is having a little fun with the Phillies' first week of the season because what we've seen has been fun. This is a fun baseball team. They've given us a lot to root for. They've given us some exciting games, some great pitching. The offense came out, and this is a very competitive division. Every series is going to be competitive. We're going to see a lot of competitive baseball here in 2021, and it should be a whole lot of fun. So hopefully that's what this first segment has set you up for as we get ready for a very, very interesting road trip that could really tell us a lot about how good this Phillies team is over the next 7 days when they go to Atlanta, to New York, and then come home to play the St. Louis Cardinals. It's going to be a very interesting test against what we think are three very, very good teams. In the meantime, up next, we're going to talk to Jeff Warren, who's one of the hosts of the outstanding Philly sports podcast called the Philadelphia Sports Table. He's going to give us his thoughts on the first week of the Philly season. That's coming up next here on Hittin' Season. Well, this next guest is long overdue. I've been on his podcast, I don't know, maybe a dozen times over the last few years, and he's always fantastic to have me on. He's had on just about everybody who writes for The Good Fight. He's had on my Hittin' Season co-hosts, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. It's one of the best and longest-running Philadelphia sports podcasts going right now. It's called the Philadelphia Sports Table. Most of you who listen to this podcast, I hope, have listened to the Philadelphia Sports Table, and the host of the Philadelphia Sports Table is a guy you also should know, Jeff Warren, who I hope you follow on Twitter at Jeffrey_Warren. Jeffrey knows his Philadelphia sports. I mean, he has been doing this show for a long, long time. He's talked to so many people from all four sports in Philadelphia, Eagles, Flyers, Sixers, and of course, the Philadelphia Phillies. And now we're going to turn the tables on Jeff, and now it's my turn to grill him. Ooh. Here on Hittin' Season. So, Jeff, welcome to the podcast. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, John. It really is bizarre being on the other end of this. I'm usually doing the interviews. Now I'm the interviewee. This is a little weird. The peppering that's going to be coming here.
Through the looking glass now, bud.
Yes. Yeah,
that's what it's going to be like. So, well, I mean, listen, we got something fun to talk about. We've got a baseball team that started off 5-1. They're playing some good baseball right now. The offense came alive in the final game of the series against the Mets on Wednesday. And they're starting another tough series in Atlanta here against the Braves. I think it's going to be a little bit of a tougher task on the road. But based on what you've seen so far during the first week and the Phillies jumping out, winning 5 out of their first 6, whatever you thought of the Phillies in the preseason, has that changed at all? Has this first week changed your perception of what the Phillies are 1 week in?
About a minute ago, John, you used a word called fun. And it's something that I haven't necessarily correlated with this Philadelphia Phillies team, whether it was spring training, of course, last season. How many seasons that we haven't had a winning season, John? 5-1 as we're recording this Thursday night here, April 8th. 5-1, and the way that they've actually done it, beating teams in the division and pulling some of them out, feeling that maybe there is a little bit of luck. But I look at this team, many of the same guys coming back as they had last year. But in the end, it really has kind of been the bullpen here. So, like, you use the word fun, and I think that's what us fans need to really embrace at this particular point in time. This team is fun to watch, and I hope they can continue this.
Well, you talk about the bullpen, and really that's been the big difference because the lineup is almost exactly the same. The first three in the rotation is exactly the same. We haven't seen enough from Matt Moore and Chase Anderson to know if they're going to be big difference makers in the number 4 and 5 spots in the rotation. But what has been the most impressive is the turnaround of the bullpen. And, you know, we talk about it. Bullpens are those things that can change the most from year to year. They're the most volatile part of any baseball team.
Yep.
And I think that's what we are seeing with this Phillies bullpen. Talk about how impressed are you with what we have seen? Have you been surprised by how good they've been so far?
Absolutely. I think anybody coming into Phillies Nation saying that the bullpen was going to do this right out of the gate, I'm telling you right now, they're lying. They have to be lying. John, after the New York Mets this past week, after they drove up Aaron Nola's pitch count to, I believe it was 92 pitches in just 4 innings, the Phillies, they relied on a quartet of relievers to cover the final 5 innings. And they didn't blow the games for them as they would have last season, John. Listen, okay, Vinny Velasquez, David Hale, 2 guys who gave up, I think, 6 runs. I mean, are they going to be counted upon the least moving forward? Probably. But the other 6 guys in the Phillies bullpen, a group that also, as we know, includes Jose Alvarado, Brandon Kinsler, has a, I believe at this particular point in time, a .96 ERA. That I like the Super 6. They've combined to throw 18 and 2/3 innings and allowed only 2 earned runs on 13 hits. They've struck out 22, walked 5. Those are fun stats to rattle off right there. Those are very fun stats, John.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the bullpen numbers, they're skewed by Vince Velasquez and David Hale.
I think Vince Velasquez is like, his ERA is like 27 or something like that. Last time I looked.
Not good. Not good. But, you know, I want to talk about Vince Velasquez in just a second. But, you know, out of the Super 6, who has impressed you the most so far out of those 6 guys?
This is a really tough question. Mm-hmm. This is a really tough question.
It is, because it's been very surprising in all 6 guys have been really good.
Brandon Kinsler, for a 36-year-old guy coming in, he's the older guy here, a lot of young talent, and at this point in time, 2 1/3 innings pitched. He's got a whip of .857, and he has given up no runs, no earned runs in 2 games. Like, he's been impressive, but I also have to say that Hector Neris, believe it or not, has been impressive, I think, thus far as the closer, John. Listen, we've all been used to what Hector Neris is. His career ERA is 3.33, but he's got a 0 ERA at this point, 4 games, 4 innings pitched. How can you not love what Hector Neris has been? Has it been absolutely perfect? No, it hasn't, but he hasn't been killing them, and I think we need to keep that in mind moving forward.
So if you're the Phillies, you've got and you've got some roster issues here with Vince Velasquez. I mean, I think David Hale is a fine guy to keep around. He doesn't cost you a whole much. Vince Velasquez costs $4 million. I mean, yeah. he's not cheap to be a guy that you hope you never have to use. But when you look at the state of starting pitching in the Phillies organization, they really don't have any depth. Spencer Howard is not going to be used as a starting pitcher this year. Just in order to build his innings up, they're going to use him as a reliever. So
right.
He's not a guy that if there's an injury in the starting rotation that you can feel comfortable slotting in there. And they could go out and they could maybe sign a veteran at some point here in the next few weeks. I think that would be a smart thing to do, but you got to add him to the 40-man roster, and then you got to figure out which of the prospects are you going to knock off. I mean, really, the next guy up is Adonis Medina if it's not Vinny Velasquez. And so there's a reason he's here. It's just not an awesome reason.
Right.
So if you're Dave Dombrowski, what are you doing about Vince Velasquez? Is there a way they can move on from him, or are they stuck with him?
John, we were talking about this 2 years ago, I think, on our podcast.
3 years ago?
Yes.
And 4 years ago? Yeah, I know.
But really, is there a place for him? I just don't think at this point. I think when we... It feels like Vinny Velasquez has been here for about 10 years. He certainly hasn't been here that long. But I think the time has come where a new scene for him, it might do him well. It might do the Phillies well. Dave Dombrowski's going to have to do something here. He is, mm-hmm. because it, right out of the gate, you have a lot of positive sparks and a lot of positive momentum starting. And we're going to get into that, I think, a little bit later. And Vince Velasquez just doesn't provide that. He doesn't provide that. Even when somebody like Zach Eflin is providing certain sparks off the mound, and that trickles, that domino effect to mm-hmm. other parts of the team, Vince Velasquez, he's not getting it. So I think the time is now to move on from him.
Yeah. Well, regarding the rest of the bullpen, the ones who are actually doing well, can they keep this up? I mean, and if so, at what level do you think this bullpen can continue for the rest of the year? Because, again, we're about 3.7% of the way through the season.
Right. Exactly. Let's keep that in mind, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 6 games played thus far as of us recording this. And John, I remember the last time you were on our podcast, I think it was mid-January, and I was kind of like, meh, on the Alvarado and Coonrod signings. And
Yeah, so was I.
Yeah, I mean, you indicated that, you know, a good baseball team and their analytics department can go out and target a certain player and maybe fix something that has been lost in them over the course of maybe a year or so. You know, recapture something that pitcher, whether it is a starting pitcher or somebody coming out of the bullpen that they once had in the past, to get that back. Now, I think it's interesting to look at what their new pitching coach, Caleb Cotham, has potentially mm-hmm. done here in terms of this pitching staff, in terms of the bullpen as well. I think it's also important that we not forget that this has really been Joe Girardi's first, you know, quote, real full season as the manager of this Phillies team. I mean, Girardi and the Phillies have pulled the right cards virtually at every turn this season, which has really just been so bizarre to watch again. But while Alvarado and Neris, you know, they've both experienced some moments where we as fans were, you know, kind of sitting on the edge of our seats, both emerged virtually unscathed from those moments. And for a bullpen that was just such a disaster last year, you know, it's the guys at the back end, Alvarado, Neris, Archie Bradley, who, you know, continue to build that confidence, and not just in themselves, I think, but the bullpen overall. It's not what Vinny Velasquez really was giving us, to get back to that. But can this bullpen keep it up? I think it is unrealistic to think the stats that I was going over before, you know, the 0.96 ERA.
Sure.
Do I think that's necessarily sustainable? Not really. But I think there is really good momentum here at the start of the season, and I think it could manifest itself into some productive pitching down the road here.
Moving to the offense, it's been a slow start for most of the folks on the offense, although like we said, they did break out on Wednesday with a 3-run homer from Alec Bohm and a 3-run homer from JT, and Rhys Hoskins hit a home run and hit 2 more doubles. He's been an extra base machine so far this year. Bryce Harper doesn't really have the numbers just yet, but he's been hitting the ball really, really hard these last few games, so I think it's just a matter of time before the balls start finding holes or leaving the stadium. But Rhys Hoskins, I think his start has been such a pleasant surprise, and he's kind of the forgotten guy in the middle of the lineup. But when he's on and when he's hot, he is as important as anybody else in that lineup. So let me ask you a hypothetical. Who finishes with a higher OPS this season, Rhys Hoskins or Bryce Harper?
Ooh, it's a hard one, John, because I look at somebody like Bryce Harper who... Well, I'll go back to what Liz Rocher was talking about on our podcast last week for our Philly season preview, and she said that Bryce Harper needs to be the rebound player this year, and I completely agreed with her. And no, it's not solely because of the huge contract, but I think it's about Bryce Harper being a proven commodity, a proven professional baseball player as long as he has, and one who has proven in his career multiple times that he can consistently produce. Now, you take a look at... I'm sorry. Yeah. Take a look at Rhys Hoskins' OPS, 1.208.
Yeah. 1208 is pretty good.
It is. It's fantastic. Bryce Harper with a 0.777 OPS. Listen, I'm going to take the consistency of Bryce Harper over all these years. And I know Rhys has also had some consistent OPS as well. I want to take the guy who's been in professional baseball and understands the game a little bit more. So I'm going to go with Bryce Harper, believe it or not.
I think that's right. We know that Rhys Hoskins has severe ups and severe downs.
Yep.
And so there will probably be a prolonged slump at some point for Rhys Hoskins. But you just hope to ride the wave while it's hot. And right now, Rhys Hoskins is providing a lot in the number two spot in the lineup. I wonder, you watching JT Realmuto hit a three-run home run against the New York Mets, the team that we all thought JT was going to end up with during the course of the offseason, but they didn't want to wait around for JT and went after Brian McCann. Now, I wonder how the Mets are feeling right now about letting JT go back to Philadelphia. Any regrets, you think, from New York about not signing JT?
Oh, absolutely. The Mets could have signed the best catcher in Major League Baseball, JT Realmuto in free agency. But they decided, again, like you said, they decided, yeah, we're going to go with James McCann. Instead, the best catcher in baseball decided to, you know, re-up with this Phillies team rather than taking the Mets' very lucrative offer of $125 million. Mm-hmm. And in their first head-to-head series here of the season, I mean, JT Realmuto really put a whopper on this Mets pitching staff. He really did. What was it, 5 RBIs, I think, in the series? How can you not love this story as a Phillies fan? How can you not love this story as a baseball fan when somebody's passed over and they just kick the heck out of the other team?
Yep.
I mean, that's what we love here in the world of Philly sports. We love storylines like that. And JT Realmuto, and I don't think it's gonna go away this season. They're playing the Mets right around the corner again. I think we're going to see JT Realmuto do even more damage in the future.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, he got off to a little bit of a slow start, but it'll be interesting to see how this offense performs down in Atlanta, whether the game against the Mets, where they went deep finally, 3 home runs in a game, whereas in their first 5 games, they only had 2.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they're able to really start to hit their stride, because this was a perceived strength of the team. And through the first 5 games, at least, they had been winning games strictly through pitching. Just returning to starting pitching for just a second, we've seen Aaron Nola have one really good game and a game in which he struggled. Zach Wheeler had a phenomenal game his first time out, and he's, of course, going to get the start on Friday night in the series opener against Atlanta. Zach Eflin had a great start. I believe that one of those three is the most important starting pitcher on the Phillies. I think there is one that is the most important starting pitcher for their, in terms of their chances of going to the postseason this year. And I want to see if you agree with it, with who I think it is. Who do you think is the most important starting pitcher on the Phillies in terms of getting to the playoffs?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, John. My co-host Eric and I, we were just recording our podcast, and he was talking about how important Zach Eflin is going to be.
That's the guy.
Moving forward.
You know what?
Here's where I'm coming from, though. And maybe it's just the emotion that I've been feeling after these first 6 games, because we saw the starters, they posted, a 1.31 ERA in the first 3 games of the season. Mm-hmm. You know, we go back to Aaron Nola, some of the struggles he kind of had against the Mets this past week. But I have to say, I think that Zach Wheeler stole the show last Saturday afternoon, pitching 7 scoreless innings against the Braves, you know, driving in 2 runs in a 4-0 victory. I mean, he provided not just a spark to the pitching staff, but I think to the team overall in terms of providing that momentum and that spark that many of us fans have been waiting to see from the starting rotation. We've certainly seen it with Aaron Nola over the years. You know, there have been bright spots here and there that do end up fading every now and then because, like, I mean, if I'm being honest, I'm just kind of waiting for, like, Hector Neris to kind of implode in the bullpen.
Sure.
And maybe that's because I'm a suffering Philly sports fan, but I do think that, you know, Zach Wheeler really provided a certain spark for us Phillies fans last week. And part of me thinks that Zach Wheeler is really going to be the cog in the pitching staff. And maybe, again, it's emotion coming from me. Maybe it's not really thinking about it. Because like I said, my co-host Eric said it's got to be Zach Eflin. That's the key cog. So I'd love to hear what you have to say and your rationale. Again, I think I'm more emotional based on what Wheeler did this past week.
No, I think it has. I think Zach Eflin absolutely is the most important guy because we know what Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler are kind of baked into the cake, and there are a lot of teams that have two really good starting pitchers, and you need two really good starting pitchers. And the Phillies had two really good starting pitchers last year. Nola and Wheeler were both very, very good. What they didn't have was a really reliable and at some point dominant number three starter, and you hope that the number four and five guy doesn't kill you. You know, I mean, you hope that he can give you six innings and that you don't have to use seven guys out of your bullpen on the nights that they start. But Zach Eflin can be the guy that can turn this rotation from one of the best rotations in the National League to simply a decent rotation. So I don't think the Phillies need him to be a third ace, but they do need him to be a really good number three, bordering on a number two, in depending on what other rotation he would happen to be in. Basically, he doesn't have to do what he did in his first game of the season every single time out there.
Right.
But a lot of those starts this year, and fewer starts and fewer month-long stretches where he has an ERA of 4.5 and 5, is going to be the difference between this team having a really, really good rotation, a postseason-capable rotation, and a rotation that's going to struggle and expose the bullpen. I mean, this bullpen's been really good, but you need the starters to go deep into games so that it's not exposed. And I think that's why he's the linchpin, because I think with Chase Anderson and with Matt Moore, you are going to have many starts where those guys only go five innings.
Right.
You need Zach Eflin to be that third guy to give you some length so that you have at least three horses in your rotation that you can count on. And I think that's a huge difference between having just two of those guys.
I think that's such a great point, John. You made great points. I'm just very emotional after Zach Wheeler's performance.
No, that was an amazing start. Yeah, that was an absolutely amazing start.
Yes.
So the guy who's put this all together and has turned around the bullpen is Dave Dombrowski. And I don't know that any of this would have happened if Dave Dombrowski had not joined this franchise.
Yeah.
And what a stroke of luck it turned out to be that Dombrowski said yes, that he decided not to stick with Nashville and trying to bring an expansion team there, that it all kind of worked out that he would come and bring his expertise to Philadelphia. And as soon as he got here, it seemed like the attitude of the entire front office shifted. John Middleton started spending money. The team started getting aggressive in free agency.
Yep.
And it started to feel like, you know, this team really actually does want to try and win here in 2021, and that's what gave me a lot of juice. That's why I picked them to win the National League East at the start of the season, because I really just felt great about the direction this team was in. But I look at what Dave Dombrowski has done this offseason, and it's not a whole lot different than what I think Matt Klintak tried to do in some cases.
Right.
Trying to go out and identify Jose Alvarado's and trying to go out and get, you know, an Archie Bradley. You could argue that David Robertson was his Archie Bradley,
yep.
And that just didn't work out, right? You know, I mean, there's no doubt Matt Klintak suffered from a lot of horrible luck. And
Injuries happen,
you know, but I still think Dave Dombrowski is better than Matt Klintak. But I guess my question is Dombrowski that much smarter than Matt Klintak? And again, we don't know how this 2021 season is going to play out. It could all blow up in everybody's faces.
Right.
But based on what we're seeing and the roster that this team has, is Dombrowski just that much better than Klintak? Or did Klintak just deal with an unfortunate amount of bad luck?
Last season, John, the Philadelphia Phillies were a top five offense, from my recollection. And again, this team is just about all the same players back on the field and in the batter's box. Real change came with the pitching. I think there's a little bit of luck going on here. I do. I do think there's some luck. And I think we do know, though, need to credit Dombrowski with assessing the available talent during the offseason And he made moves to bring this bullpen to life, at least early on here in this early part of the season. So at the end of the day, as we all know, you know, whoever's at the helm, when the results come in, whether they're good or bad result, if you're winning, you look like a genius. If you're not winning, you definitely look dumb. And Matt Klentak was by, whether it's by his own doing, whether it's by bad luck with injuries, didn't look all that bright in terms of some of the decisions he made. Dave Dombrowski comes in, but like you said, I do think that he made and assessed where this bullpen needed to go. But I think we also need to realize that there was only one direction for this bullpen to go this coming season with new talent, and that was up for sure. So I think we all need to keep that in mind too.
All right, Jeff, last thing for you as we finish up here, and it's just a general question. Is this Phil's success, is the Phil's success sustainable? And by that, do you think that this is going to continue?
I think there's going to be some rough spots. This is an NL East that I think is going to be extremely competitive and could be one of the most compelling divisions in baseball to follow this entire season. There is talent throughout this division. I don't necessarily think it is sustainable, but I do think, again, when you have performances like Zach Wheeler, Zach Eflin, Aaron Nola on the mound to give that spark to this team that really hasn't had a lot of spark in some time, I think there is a mechanism to take that, embrace that, bring it to the field with you every single time you're out there. Now, am I worried for June, John? Because every single year I'm worried for June, because we know what happens with this team in June. They just do not perform well. So I'm going based on history, but I'm also going based on the fact that, again, we go back to the stats we talked about from the bullpen. That's not going to continue. It's not sustainable in baseball. But I do think that there is a spark there right now. There's something special going on with this team. And I think we just got to keep enjoying it. And if it's not sustainable, I think that it could be compounded in a way where we still can enjoy this team, even if they're not going to be, you know, 100 and 162 or 62. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I get you. No doubt. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been a fun week, but there is a lot of season left in front of us. And as we saw in 2019, the team got off to a fast start, and it slipped away pretty quickly thereafter. So I don't think anybody's putting any carts before the horse, but we're all just enjoying some fun baseball. And
it's fun.
It is fun. And you know what else is fun? The Philadelphia Sports Table is a lot of fun. So, folks, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast, and subscribe to the Philadelphia Sports Table. Give them a chance if you haven't yet. They're a fantastic podcast. They have been around forever, and they've been covering all four sports terrifically over the last few years. And I'm always happy to go on whenever Jeff and the boys ask me to do so. And so I'm sure you'll hear me on there again pretty soon. You can follow the Philadelphia Sports Table's Twitter account at Philadelphia PST. And also you can follow my good friend Jeff Warren on Twitter at Jeffrey_Warren. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on Hittin' Season, buddy. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, John. Thanks so much.
Well, up next, we'll talk a little bit about the finish of the Mets-Marlins game on Thursday. A crazy finish to that game. And in particular, the Mets broadcast team, how they reacted to it, I thought was very, very interesting. I'll play that audio for you coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So the Mets and Marlins were playing the first game of their series in New York at Citi Field. And it was a tight ball game. It looked like it was going to be a Marlins win until the late innings when Jeff McNeil hit a game-tying home run in the bottom of the ninth to tie the score at two apiece. And then the Mets loaded the bases with one out against Anthony Bass. Michael Conforto came to the plate, and with the count 1-2, it appeared as though Bass struck him out on a slider that darted across the inside part of the plate, but it grazed Michael Conforto's huge elbow padding, which should not be allowed in Major League Baseball, by the way. Players should not be allowed to wear giant, huge pads on their elbows and their forearms and everything. A shin pad for fouling a ball off your leg is fine. But none of this crap all over your arms where basically you go up there dressed like an umpire trying to hit. You can't be wearing that stuff. I'm sorry. Just no. If you can't be up at the plate without a huge elbow pad to protect you, you shouldn't be hitting. Anyway, Michael Conforto's got this huge elbow pad on. The ball grazes his elbow, and it appears as though the hit-by-pitch forces in the game-winning run, and the New York Mets win 3-2. But as you will hear on the broadcast by SNY-TV, and this is Ron Darling, Keith Hernandez, and Gary Cohen, they do a phenomenal job breaking this down. Give it a listen.
1-2 coming. And the slider in there, strike three.
Hit him. Conforto's hit him. On the pitch.
Hit him.
But it was in the strike zone.
Oh.
It hit Conforto. He made no effort to get out of the way. It was a strike, but he didn't move. And Don Mattingly is going to come out and argue the call with the home plate umpire, Ron Culpa.
The ball hit him, and it was going to be a strike.
Yep.
So the Mets are celebrating. The Marlins are arguing. And unless this is overruled, the Mets have themselves a 3-2 win as Conforto is nicked by a pitch. Now, by rule, you have to make an effort to get out of the way. And that's what the Marlins are arguing.
This is a strike,
yep.
And he gets hit. Look at that. Oh, you can't do that.
No,
they have totally got a
case. They
got
to bring
here.
It back.
Totally have
yes.
a case.
They're going to.
It's absolute.
He stuck his elbow right into that pitch.
It's going to be strike three.
The umpires are outs. Conferring, and let's see.
Now, the hit by pitch is reviewable.
The umpires are leaving. Or are they going?
No,
to
no, the no. They're going to. They're going to the headset.
I don't think they can go to the headset on this. This is not a reviewable play.
Well, hit by pitch is reviewable. Why can't you say hit by pitch in the strike zone reviewable?
I don't think so. I think whether he is hit or not is reviewable, but it's a judgment call by the umpire as to whether he made an effort to get out of the way.
We're trying to get it right.
Can't do that.
I'm almost certain that.
You couldn't call a strike.
That they cannot overrule this on replay by saying that he stuck his elbow into an arm.
No, but you can call it that he stuck his arm in purpose and he's out.
Yes.
You can call that on a review, umpire can call that.
What are they calling it? What are they saying?
They're saying the play stands. Game's over. The Mets win it.
Wow. That's...
Michael Conforto clearly stuck his elbow into it, and Mattingly's coming out and arguing, but I'm sure he's going to be told that that's not reviewable.
But you're trying to get it right. They don't get it right, so why even have replay?
So Michael Conforto gets a game-winning RBI by sticking his elbow into the pitch from Anthony Bass, and the Mets rally for two in the bottom of the ninth, and only now can they fully celebrate as the umpires say that the game is over. What a bizarre way to end the game.
Folks, that's a master class in broadcasting right there. This is the Mets broadcast, and this just shows you why they are the best in the game. They were honestly critical of their own team's victory, and seemingly outraged that it was allowed to stand. I mean, Michael Conforto does. If you haven't seen the video, I highly recommend it. It's on my timeline, at John Stolness on Twitter. He leans his elbow across the strike zone, into the strike zone, to get hit with the pitch. And the umpire, Ron Culpa, after the game said, "We messed up. He should have been called out." I mean, this is a game that the umpire, and listen, to his credit, Ron Culpa admitted that he got it wrong. But I don't understand why in the rush afterwards that they wouldn't be able to stop and talk to each other, which they did. I mean, they reviewed the play, as you heard, and the review was just to find out whether or not it hit him. But you could hear that it hit something before it hit the catcher's mitt. So you could hear it. It was clear as day that it actually hit Conforto. The question was whether or not Conforto's elbow was in the strike zone, and that's not reviewable. You can't review whether or not, as you heard them talking about, whether Conforto was intending to move his elbow into the strike zone. And so they should have taken their time. They should have deliberated on it a little bit more, and Culpa admitted that they got it wrong. But I was really impressed with the Mets broadcast. I was impressed with Cohen. I was impressed with Hernandez, and I was impressed with Darling. How basically they were annoyed. Like, no, we don't want to win a game like this. This is bad. This is bad umpiring. It's a bad outcome. It didn't sit well with them. And every team's home broadcast should be taking notes at the feet of these guys. These guys just do it better than anybody else. And no, that's not to slight the Phillies broadcast team. The Phillies broadcasts are fine. I wonder how they would have reacted to something like this happening. I think Tom McCarthy and John Kroc and Ben Davis, they probably would have noted, of course, that Conforto did the wrong thing, or that their player did, you know, got away with something, right? I mean, the Mets clearly got away with a victory here that they didn't earn, at least at that point in the game, hadn't earned yet. They very well might have gotten a hit on the next pitch and the game would have been over. But at the very least, I thought the way the Mets broadcast team was really handled it, how they handled it was really cool, and was kind of an object lesson in good sportsmanship. Like, no, we shouldn't have won this game. That was a bogus call. It was a terrible call, and that's a crappy way to end a baseball game. But hey, congratulations to the Mets. I mean, every team needs a little luck along the way here and there. The Phillies will probably win a game on a call they probably don't deserve, and will probably lose a game that they don't deserve on a call that they didn't deserve to have go against them. Same thing with the Mets. These things tend to even out over the course of a long season. All right, let's get to our stat of the week. This week's stat involves Rhys Hoskins. He's one of four players in Phillies history to have seven extra base hits through the team's first six games. The others are Ryan Howard in 2010, John Kruk in 93, and Del Ennis in the pennant-winning season of 1950. Folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Jeff Warren for coming on the podcast. And again, just a reminder to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon by going to patreon.com/hittin'season. And don't forget to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Tell them about all the podcasts we have to offer. I mean, this is a fun baseball team. Now's your chance. Now's the time to become a fan of thegoodfight.com and the Good Fight podcast feed. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.